Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Melissa Miner. She'll be telling us about her experiences and family life with an individual with a disability. So tell me a little bit about your family's connection to disability life.
Okay, well, my two brothers, they're born 8 years apart. My oldest brother and youngest brother were born with brain damage, and as a result, are mentally or intellectually challenged. Physically, they're generally okay other than epilepsy, but mentally, it's just like a disability, yeah.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the diagnosis process, some of what they had to go through?
Well, I was a kid myself, but basically, for my oldest brother, I remember asking my dad about it when I was a kid, and my dad said that he could just tell, like they could just tell when he was born that something was off, something was wrong. And my mom wasn't too specific, but she said there were a lot of tests done in London. And he was just born that way. And it's the same with my little brother. I don't know too much about the specifics. I just know that one area in their brain is not getting enough oxygen. So it didn't grow as much as the other areas in their brain. And it's the same area for both. And I don't know which area that is.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the coping methods they've used over the years?
Well, Paul, like my oldest brother, is like the most positive person you could meet. He's just the happiest. He's super happy, super positive. He works really, really hard at all of his tasks, like if he has a task set before him, like for example, get to work by 9 a.m., like that's on his mind to get to work. Like at the minute he wakes up, he times everything out. Like his shower is 10 minutes long, and then he does this. And anyway, so he works really, really hard at his tasks, and then he's just like he's always smiling and always talking to people, even strangers. It's like he has no social boundaries. But he just makes people smile when he does talk to people. And my little brother, he's sort of the same way, but just different personality. Like he's very talkative with others, very, very social. I think he aims to work hard, but he gets really distracted really easily. And he's really into listening to music and reading about his favorite bands and that sort of thing. And when it came to their education process growing up, like they were in the community living classes at school, and I think they have a different name for them now, like STEPS or something. But at the time, they're called community living. And yeah, so they just, I don't know, like, when it came to, like, coping, it was just, like, their everyday life was, like, they're born that way, so that's what they knew. And my parents, they just raised my brothers the same as me and my other brother in terms of, like, discipline and expectations with chores and that and that sort of thing, and after school activities and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
So, did you find that the family support may have impacted? You mentioned they have a positive outlook on things today. Do you think the family support played a role in that?
Yeah, huge support. Yeah, like my brothers, they're physically really fit. My oldest brother used to be a marathon runner, and it's actually kind of a funny story, in that he was on this running team, like this running factory running group, and they were training for a half marathon. And they gave him the route for their long run that day. But the route wasn't actually marked. Like, they sort of gave him a map, and my mom drove him around the route a couple times to say, this is where you turn, and this is... But anyways, he got lost in the route, and he kept running. And he ended up running well over a marathon distance. And that's when they ended, he was missing, and people were frantically, like, driving around looking for him, and... But anyways, and then I guess that day is when they found out, like, whoa, Paul can do marathons. So so then my parents, registered in marathons, and he got really into that. And my dad would help him with his, goals for the week. Like, okay, Friday run 20 kilometers, and Monday would do a fast 5K. Like, he'd help him with it. So anyways, so my parents are very invested into taking, the extra steps so my brothers can do the normal whatever normal is, but so that my brothers can do the activities that they love. And another example, my little brother, when he was 18 and started getting his ODSP check, my dad, my parents recognized that it's their money, but my dad taught my little brother how to budget, and it's still something he's working on today, but he my dad made a little Excel worksheet thing and put into little categories. This is how much you spend on junk food. This is how much you spend on your Special Olympics fees that you have to pay for. And this is how much you spend on whatever other things that he needs. So, so whenever my little brother would buy something, he'd show him how much, do you know what I mean? In he could see on paper or on the screen, how much of his money of that month went towards other things. And, my parents, they would expect, for me and my other brother, that we engage in healthy activities, and we would do that on our own. Like, I enjoy running and getting involved in races and stuff like that. And that's something I can do on my own. And for my brothers to do that, my parents just sort of give them the leg up, the help to also do that. So anyways, and a good example, my uncle was born with cerebral palsy, and as well as so he's physically, he couldn't, he can walk and so the cerebral palsy affected his physical body, obviously, but not to the point where it's he couldn't walk, and he could speak, and he was definitely mentally challenged. And at that time, doctors encouraged my grandparents to put him in an institution, but my grandma didn't put him in an institution, and instead they raised him along with my mom and her sisters. And, but the only difference is even though he was raised in the home, with the family, he was treated differently. His food was cut for him, and he didn't have to do chores and that sort of thing. So as a result, now as a man in his mid-50s, he's pretty dependent, on other people for basic things. Whereas my brothers, it took longer to do the dishes, but they were expected to do the same chores as me and my other brother. So, and then my parents would just have the patience, to stand by and make sure it's done right. And, done several times to learn the right way. And yeah. So, My parents, I guess their general attitude was to support the actions that lead to healthy independence.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Friends and family play a crucial role in disability life and support, especially with acquired disabilities. Fact is, when a person has to look at new ways, adaptations, to do the things they love to do, it can be a difficult process. People can find themselves reluctant or unwilling to try. But, with the support of friends and family, you come to a place where you recognize things are a lot more possible than they seem. 9/10 of disability life is attitude, I think. Looking at, to me, it's always been in how you look at it. If you believe something's possible, and you're motivated enough, you go out, you find a way to do what you love to do, what you want to do. It's not always about showing the community that you can do something great. It's not always about dispelling the myths. It can be just a matter of personal fulfillment, doing what you didn't think you could, achieving something for your own sake. But I maintain, whenever there is a victory like that, whether it be something the community stands up and takes note of or not, friends and family, the people who care about you, they always know. It brings a smile to their face every time when a person with a disability finds greater strength in themselves, when they recognize they are a capable, strong person. Melissa's story shared a very great deal of this, I think. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hi, Constable Ryan Burney here, Police Coordinator with Windsor and Essex County Crime Stoppers. Windsor Police Service now have a new page on their website called Wanted in Windsor. There are pictures of people within our community. They have arrest warrants out for them. To view the photos, simply go to www.windsorpolice.on.ca. If you know the whereabouts of any of these individuals, you're asked to call Crime Stoppers at 258-8477. That's 258-TIPS. Do not approach these people. They are considered dangerous. If you have any information about this or any other crime, contact us. Remember, you remain anonymous, you don't have to go to court, and you can earn a cash reward.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Melissa Miner. She shared her stories of disability life in a family setting. Some remarkable stuff, I think, folks. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Nicole Daigneault. She'll be giving us an update on her yoga program for individuals with disabilities and special needs. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the yoga program for those with special needs.
Okay, well, I personally just returned from a 10-day stay in London, England. My purpose of going to London was to check out the Special Yoga Center, which is a center completely focused on teaching yoga to people with special needs, from children to adults. And so it was just really nice to go and meet some colleagues and see what they've got going on there. So I'm just extra inspired and excited about the booming of yoga for everybody. I really hope that more and more people understand that yoga is for everybody. And here in Windsor, my classes continue both at Harmony and Action. So if people are interested in taking those classes, that's for adults, and they do not have to be members of Harmony in Action. They don't have to be part of their day program. They can go just for the 10 a.m. Thursday yoga class. That's weekly. So they can call Harmony in Action regarding that. Or women only, girls and women, are welcome to come to my Saturday morning 11:15 class at the Jackson Park Health Center. And aside from that, Cam, I just really hope that people know that any of my classes, all of my public classes. So that includes the ones at the University of Windsor for the campus rec. We encourage, in fact, I just wrote an article for one of the University of Windsor sort of digital newspaper, online newspapers, just regarding, you know, people who may not necessarily think that they can attend a regular yoga class. I would love to see them come in. I can have them do all kinds of different modified exercises where they can be participating fully in just standard regular yoga classes. So I just really hope that anybody who's interested in trying that out and they can't make the 10 a.m. or the Saturday 11:15 a.m. classes, that they would maybe possibly even consider checking out one of my regular classes and just trying it out, seeing what kinds of modifications that I can give them.
So,
and as things build, I'd like to add on more and more classes, and just really want to put out there to also caregivers that I would love to begin a class. I've sort of just been putting out the feelers. I would love to begin a class where, you know, caregivers or parents or siblings or friends, whoever, but can join the person who is maybe in a wheelchair or maybe has some special modifications needed, but to have a sort of a partner class where the two of them together participate and each person is doing some yoga, and then they'll be doing a few things together where they're supporting each other, and it just creates such a nice time together. It's something great to do for an hour, and creates just such a beautiful bond. So just really hoping that maybe people might contact me if they're interested in that, because we're trying to figure out the best day and time and things like that to hold it there at my Jackson Park Health Center office. So just real quick, www.cocoyoga.ca will give people my contact information and information about my classes and everything like that. Cocoyoga.ca. And I know you wanted to talk about other stuff.
So in terms of your trip to England, can you tell me a little bit about some of the observations you made about disabilities yoga practices?
Well, it's a center that's been running for about 10 years now. And they do things on a completely charitable basis. They have established a really nice sort of foundation of support to be able to help people who maybe cannot necessarily afford yoga. So that was just really beautiful to see. You know, just the heart and loving contribution that center is making. And I was able to, like I said, meet lots of the teachers and participate in a couple of classes, and it was wonderful.
So, in terms of the practice of disabilities yoga, how is it similar or different from able-bodied equivalents?
Well, it's similar in that we are all trying to quiet down and be still. So, all of my classes are, you know, sort of the goal, everything we're doing is to try to create that stillness of the body and of the mind and the calm breath. So every one of my classes will involve breath awareness, breath control, some body consciousness exercises, and just trying to really give the muscles and joints a chance to be calm. So that is across the board. My big focus physically is on correct alignment. So no matter who's in my class, I'm looking at how their joints and bones line up, and I'm giving them unique and individual guidance that will help them to slowly realign and adjust and correct postural patterns that have maybe set in that do not support them. So that's in all my classes. Now, a class that's attended by people who are maybe in wheelchairs. Of course, they're not doing standing poses and the same type of sun salutations, but I give them movements and postures that they can do in their chair, free there in their chair, or bringing their chair up near a wall where they can kind of lean in and press in against the wall. If the person requires a support worker or helper, that person, I'm giving them instructions on how to, you know, keep the movement going, and lend that extra hand. So there's a lot of similarities. And then there's just a few adaptations that I make for anybody who maybe wants to do some of the class seated or is in their chair, and maybe possibly doesn't have, you know, a full range of motion, or you know, any kind of challenge like that. So I'm just always, and every one of us, no matter what class I'm teaching, every one of us has something that is challenging. Right. Every one of us has maybe a pose that they find really difficult, or a part of their body where they're weak, or even too toned. So we're all working on trying to find where our weaker spots are, where we're maybe overusing and overtoning, and redistributing that effort throughout the body. And that's sort of my job, to look at that and give support. And I just really want to, you know, throw out there again that if anybody wants to just come to even just a standard one of my classes, I would love to show them how they can do the class along with others, you know, even if there are some restrictions.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Cam, I always thank you for allowing me to share information about yoga going on in Windsor, so thank you.
It's my pleasure. I think Nicole provided some great insights as to how disabilities yoga and able-bodied yoga are very much alike, because it doesn't have to be reinventing the wheel, so to speak. It doesn't have to be something extensively modified. It's one of those practices that has great benefit for everyone in the community. For a person with a disability, say one in a wheelchair, can provide a chance for their muscles to actually get some blood flow, to get some stimulation going. That's an important thing. Fact is, even if a person has a condition that's left them with paralysis for life, that doesn't mean they can't improve. It doesn't mean they can't continue to grow stronger. Thing is, if you live in hope for a better tomorrow each and every day, one of those days you'll be right. You'll find it. Fact of the matter is, in the meantime, as a person with a disability waits on new technological advancements, new medical advancements, it's up to them to take the steps just to keep them at their best. Get out there to explore some range of motion, even to keep their minds fresh and sharp, and even open to new ideas. Being willing to take a class or to get out in society, share some time with people, get to know their stories, be a part of the wonderful things the community has to offer. For there is absolutely no reason that a person with a disability shouldn't be able to be involved in every aspect of life. Both guests today served as a reminder that being a part of the community, being a part of classes, family structures, even having friendships, is an important part of disability life, but life in general. Nobody in this world gets by completely on their own. Nobody and say they accomplished everything on their own. Recognizing the support of the community, friends, family, even instructors, people there to provide a little help when necessary. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink4 HANDILINK, and the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear your stories, folks. I personally think a class for caregivers and interested parties, it's a great idea. Teaching those who support individuals with disabilities how to be there in support of them at their best is a critical thing. What one doesn't know, they can't put into practice. Therefore, it's important that caregivers and interested parties keep upgrading their skills. They keep not only advancing themselves, but keep that open mind, that heart for their work, that inspiration that tells them they're making the world a better place by supporting a capable, intelligent member of society, helping them to achieve their best. It really does fall to each member of society to answer the question, who will I be? Will I be that person who builds up, teaches a person with a disability they can achieve? Or am I going to be someone who buys into outdated and outmoded stereotypes that say a disability is a limitation? It has to be something that impairs a person's ability to achieve. Nothing could be further from the truth. Disability life is simply another perspective, another way of looking at things, finding adaptations, finding one's creative center, if you will. Just looking at practices such as accessible yoga, a really great example, in so much as these individuals are getting the same benefit as their able-bodied counterparts. Better blood flow, better mindset, better muscle stimulation. And it's not something extensively modified. And certainly these practices don't lose their meaning, because the only question that matters in disabilities, yoga, athletics, or anything really, is there a benefit? Is this something that will make life better for those who partake, whether they have a disability or not? Question about recreational activities, sports, classes, just day-to-day life, is only a matter of what does it mean for these individuals? Academics are also a great example, in so much as the question becomes, can these individuals with disabilities learn? Can they become stronger, more well-rounded? And if the answer is yes, then the activity is worthwhile. If it's something that takes modifications, fine, modify it. But never, ever assume that a person with a disability who has some modifications is being given an unfair advantage, or that things do lose the meaning or the spirit of the event or what have you, because it's simply another way of getting to the same goal. Enjoying oneself, becoming educated, working in a professional setting. If there are different steps taken there, there's nothing wrong with that. We as a society cannot be so narrow-minded as to say there's only one path to success in this world. Disability life is all about taking the road less traveled. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.